So the first speaker will be Allison Brenner, and she's at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. And so without any further delay, we'll let Allison go ahead and make her presentation.
Good morning. As you know, my name is Allison Brenner. I'm a doctoral student at the University of Michigan, and I focus most of my research on health inequalities based on stress mechanisms. And so we have no financial disclosures or financial interest to disclose. And my co-presenters are Dr. Jose Bauermeister and Dr. Mark Zimmerman. So, one note. Just one note, in the abstract, it said that I would be using data from the National Study of Adolescent Health, Longitudinal Study of Adolescent Health, but the data that I needed was not actually, was delayed and wasn't available, so I had to use an alternative data set. My theoretical questions and hypotheses are the same, but I have some slightly different variables. Okay, so just a bit about my theory. I have three theories, the first of which is the biopsychosocial framework that informs my research. And this was developed by Engel, and it really integrates biological, psychological, and social influences on health, and it has its roots in medicine, in linking behavior to kind of medical health outcomes. The model has been applied specifically to research on looking at stressors as kind of health exposures and racism specifically as a stressor, and this is some of the research by David Williams and colleagues, and this really kind of links these exaggerating coping responses in response to racism as a stressor to physiological health outcomes. My second model, or neighborhood models, the structure and stress model. The structural model demonstrates how neighborhood social and economic disadvantage interacts with an individual's socioeconomic status to influence health outcomes kind of above and beyond the effects of just socioeconomic status of the individual alone. And the stress model kind of demonstrates how neighborhood disadvantage relates to health, and specifically mental health, via this mechanism of social and economic disorder. And disorder includes stressors like crime and violence and substance use in an area. My final model is the transactional model of stress and coping, which is Lazarus and Folkman's model. And this connects, in my research, connects exposure to stressors in a neighborhood or in a community to both psychological and physiological health outcomes. And this includes stressor appraisal, coping, as well as social support. Okay, so a little bit about urban neighborhoods. They are generally disproportionately comprised of minority populations, and I focus specifically on neighborhoods that have larger percentages of Black and African American individuals. These neighborhoods typically have higher levels of social and economic disadvantage, which then results in the residents being kind of persistently and chronically exposed to stressors. And in addition to just this chronic exposure to stressors, neighborhood disadvantage and disorder may undermine kind of these mechanisms of social support, these positive benefits that an individual can tap into. Gonzalez and colleagues, for example, found that under high levels of community stress, that youth were not able to, even using active coping techniques, were not able to kind of overcome the stressors and had higher levels of depressive symptoms. Okay, so I look at both perceived or psychological stress as well as physiological stress, but there are some weaknesses in terms of perceived stress, although it relates very well and is an important construct in connecting kind of exposure to stressors to mental health outcomes. It might not be kind of ideal way to look at physiological or health outcomes, and so physiological biomarkers of stress kind of might be a good mechanism in order to kind of connect exposure to health and health inequalities. So when a person is confronted with stressful stimuli or stressful situations, the body initiates this kind of stress and coping response mechanism. And the stress response is mediated by the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, or HPA axis, as well as the sympathetic nervous system. And so this cascade of hormones is released during this response. And this is actually a very adaptive mechanism and is positive in this fight or flight response. But under kind of chronic and sustained exposure to stressful situations, the body kind of has this hyperactivated response. And this could result in wear and tear on the body and allostatic load or the physiological outcomes. And so therefore, physiological stress biomarkers might also help us relate coping behaviors which affect hormones in the body to physiological health outcomes. Thank you. So cortisol is the biomarker that I focus on in this research. It's a primary stress mediator that is largely responsible for regulation in the central nervous system, as well as the metabolic and immune systems. And cortisol may relate kind of back to this chronic exposure to stressors. Cortisol is associated with cognitive decline, immunosuppression, and insulin resistance, which then may be reflected in physiological health outcomes. And cortisol is very complex, the relationship between exposure to stressors and cortisol and health. And the relationships depend on the health outcome and the type of stressor and coping. Miller and colleagues found when they did a meta-analysis that stressor exposure resulted in decreased levels of morning cortisol, higher cortisol reactivity, and then a blunted or flattened diurnal rhythm. So kind of there's a whole trajectory to cortisol. And this is a diagram of my conceptual model. So we know that Black and African American populations have higher rates of morbidity and mortality and chronic and infectious disease than their white counterparts. And so one explanation for this is the stress mechanism. And so I look at stress and specifically physiological biomarkers of stress as a way to connect these structural inequalities that are shown at the bottom of my model to later health inequalities. So my specific hypotheses are that neighborhood disadvantage affects individuals' initial cortisol levels as well as cortisol reactivity or the change in cortisol over time, and that substance use, John Henryism, social support, and perceived stress will moderate this relationship between exposure to stressors in the neighborhood and cortisol. So to test my hypotheses, I used data from the Flint Adolescent Study, which is a longitudinal study of adolescent risk and resilience. The data was collected from participants living in Flint, Michigan, which is a urban city with high levels of social and economic disadvantage and is mostly comprised of African American and Black individuals. And so specifically in wave 6 and 7 of the study, we took saliva samples for a subset of the population and were able to collect salivary cortisol measures. And so I used wave 6, which is was 2000 and 2001 when participants were 20 and 21 years old. And I limited my analyses to the Black and African American at that time, youth or young adults, because there were just so few white youths to examine. I also used census data from the 2000 census for my markers of disadvantage. Okay, so my individual variables, my dependent variable is cortisol, and it was collected during the interview over 3 separate time points, and so I look at both initial cortisol levels as well as reactivity. I also look at several demographic factors, and then individual psychosocial and behavioral factors that you can see listed there. Substance use is a composite of alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana use, and social support comes from 3 different sources, and then perceived stress and hassles is Cohen's Hassle Scale. So for my neighborhood variables, I use the census tract level indicators, and I'll kind of explain this a bit at the end, why I chose to do this. And I chose here, there were 4 measures of kind of typical measures of neighborhood disadvantage that I included in my analysis. So I did a multi-level growth curve analysis. I used HLM software for this. And again, I only used 1 wave of data, so this was a cross-sectional analysis. I had 160 individuals in my analysis, which resulted in a total of 478 data points because there were the 3 different samples. And these individuals were nested within 34 different census tracts. And I used a stepwise model building approach where I first looked at the individual level and then added in the kind of neighborhood level. So for some of my results, average cortisol or initial cortisol levels in the sample was associated with the kind of general pattern of reactivity for individuals in the sample. Cortisol reactivity increased over time, and it actually increased in this was a linear model. It did not fit a quadratic curve. About a little bit over 8% of the variance in the cortisol outcome was from differences in kind of between tracks and not kind of overall sample averages. So there was some kind of neighborhood effect, as we'd say. And there was also significant variation in cortisol within an individual. So there was basically just this reactivity pattern. So none of the demographic variables, which remain in control variables like education, socioeconomic status, were associated with either initial cortisol or the reactivity in cortisol. The sampling time, I included sampling time in the analysis because cortisol varies depending on what time you sample it. So this was significant with the initial level of cortisol, although it did not affect the trajectory or reactivity. So I retained this variable in the analysis. And then daily hassles or perceived stress was also associated with only the initial level of cortisol. And this was in the direction such that individuals who reported more hassles had higher initial cortisol levels. So this graph shows a cortisol reactivity or cortisol over time in the sample, and it's broken down by level of education within the census tract. And so you can see that the red line, the solid red line, represents higher, not only higher cortisol reactivity, but this is for individuals that were living in census tracts that had overall lower levels of education. So these individuals are experiencing more cortisol reactivity. And this slide kind of breaks it down even further. So this is complicated, so I'll try to kind of tease out some of the more important effects. But this shows, again, the cortisol reactivity for the sample, but this is looking at differences in neighborhoods as kind of an interaction between neighborhood level education and neighborhood or tract level poverty. And so first, I'm just going to kind of point out the blue lines, the top solid and bottom dashed blue line, which represent census tracts with kind of lower levels of education on average. And so you can see there's a significant kind of difference in the reactivity for these two types of neighborhoods. So the top solid line represents individuals living in tracts with lower levels of education, but also lower levels of poverty. And so these individuals have the highest reactivity over time. And that's in comparison to the bottom line, which shows individuals living in low education and also high poverty neighborhoods. So one explanation is just that the individuals that are represented by that steepest curve have kind of this exaggerated coping response and possibly higher effort coping, although we didn't see the direct effect, which is increasing their cortisol, and that the individuals in the bottom line kind of are almost just kind of feel like they're hopeless and really just cannot kind of get out of the situation and don't have as exaggerated of a coping response. This is kind of complicated. I'd love to hear anybody's kind of takes on this relationship at the end. This shows the relationship between living in a census tract with kind of depending on the percentage of people that are in the labor force and an individual's perception of stress. So the slope of these lines are not significant. The reactivity is not significant. However, you can see that there's a much higher initial level of cortisol for individuals with that top kind of purple solid line. And those individuals are not only, they're living in census tracts where there are more people that are disconnected with the labor force, but they're also reporting, these are also individuals that are reporting kind of high perceived stress. So that kind of interaction is really driving up their initial cortisol levels, although it does not affect their reactivity. And so just to kind of review some of the findings that I had, individual factors were largely not related to cortisol in my sample. And the relationship, aside from, we did see the relationship between perceived stress and cortisol. The relationship between neighborhood disadvantage and cortisol is very complex. We saw that higher tract education in the census tract appeared to decrease individual cortisol levels, although when you looked with at the relationship between looking at both poverty and education in the census tract, we saw this kind of moderation effect. And then participation in the labor force also interacted with an individual level factor, perceived stress, to influence initial cortisol levels. Some of my limitations are that I had a small sample size, as this was only a subset of the larger sample. And so because of that, although I initially planned to use block groups in my original study, which would much kind of be a better representation of a neighborhood unit because they're much smaller, I had to use tracts in order to have enough power. And then because I had somewhat decreased power, I really wasn't able to look at some more complex and three-way interactions. The measure of neighborhood disadvantage is kind of a stressor, although it's been used in the research and it is related to health and health outcomes. It may not be ideal. It might be better to use kind of more social processes and crime and violence as stressors. And then finally, I had three measurements of cortisol that were kind of clustered together in a short amount of time. And so for future research, you know, we could use, it would be more ideal to use multiple cortisol measures over time, including a waking cortisol, as well as kind of looking at really that trajectory through the day, and maybe we'd see it more of a quadratic effect instead of just a linear effect. And it could also look at some of the protective factors like self-esteem and some psychological variables like hopefulness, which might be buffering individuals from the exposure to stressors in a neighborhood. And finally, could look at other analytic techniques like maybe cluster analysis in order to kind of address these same phenomenon. So in general, this is kind of a start to try to better understand the ways in which a stress mechanism, specifically physiological stress, might connect fundamental exposures and inequalities in social and political and economic factors to these health greater health inequalities. So thank you for your attention, and I'd be happy to answer questions now or at the end.
We'll take one question.